Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. George Orwell famously wrote in 1984, "Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past." China's control of the narrative surrounding Hong Kong's relation to the country is now reaching further than its own borders. A new provision to Article 38 of their national security law now applies to those in the U.S. and beyond. But can a foreign country tell citizens of another what to do? Joining us for that conversation, we have Tim Shorn. He's Associate Professor of Political Science and Director of International Studies at the University of South Dakota. Dr. Shorn, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this is 2020 is the year of where the word unprecedented is completely overused, but here we are again because this national security law of China's is unprecedented. Tell us the nuts of and bolts of this. What's at the core of this national security law?
Well, I mean, to some extent, this is a continuation of policies that have been put in place by President Xi, which really resonate back to the days of Mao. It's becoming a much more authoritarian government again. It never ceased being authoritarian, but the government is expanding its reach in many ways. And it shows kind of the constant struggle in China that has been present since 1949 between modernization and control. And the current administration in China is moving toward the control aspect. And this law is one of the tools it's going to use from its toolbox to control not just what happens in mainland China, but also in that theoretically separate system of Hong Kong, and well beyond through a rather broad law that is questionable under international law, but at least according to the Chinese, is also appropriate. Essentially, they want to stop any disagreement, any dissension by anyone toward the Chinese government, anytime, anywhere, anyone. And so this particular national security law is incredibly far-reaching and really the most far-reaching national security law that I have ever seen.
Explain the situation in Hong Kong a little bit more for people who have not been following lately, because there have been some recent pro-democracy protests that people are saying this could be an intentional quashing of those kinds of demonstrations in the future.
Right. If we need to just look back a couple of decades, 23 years ago, Great Britain handed control of Hong Kong over to the People's Republic of China. And part of the agreement was that Hong Kong would retain the types of freedoms that it had under British control, although we have to remember it was still British control, that it would maintain what rights and liberties it had as it reverted back to China. Now, this was essentially a gentle person's agreement, if you will, because there was nothing that would prevent China from doing what it is doing today, and that is reasserting a tougher type of control. And this comes on the heels of demonstrations that have really been building in Hong Kong over the last few years, that have really come to a head over the last year, where especially the young are saying, we don't want to be part of the type of system that the People's Republic of China is. We want to be sure to retain the rights and liberties that we have that were slowly being eroded over the last decade, especially under the President Xi regime. And so the protests have become more pronounced. They've become really more violent, more aggressive. And the Chinese government in Beijing finally said, enough. To some extent, they looked back at what had happened in 1989 in Tiananmen Square, and I think they decided we're not going to put up with the type of protests that we're seeing in Hong Kong that we had quashed before in our own country. And so there have been changes to the law, changes to police practices, changes to the role of the central government, and this national security law is just kind of the last step in a slow process of asserting control over Hong Kong and ending those demonstrations.
It also includes national security education. So talk a little bit about the Chinese government's efforts to reach into schools and say, we want you to be teaching one thing.
Right. And the Chinese government loves the term education. And when they use the word education in this type of policy, it's really to get the message across that the central government is in charge, theoretically the Communist Party, but it's really more kind of non-ideological authoritarianism now than it is just communism. But they want to make it clear, beginning with elementary school children, that they are there to serve the state. The state is not there to serve them. And that there are certain expectations that rest on the shoulders of the Chinese citizens, and that is essentially surrendering personal authority to the Chinese government. And we see this not just through the national security law as it's going to be applied to Hong Kong. We also see it in the treatment of the Uyghurs in the Xinjiang province in western China as they round up probably millions of Muslim Uyghur people who are Chinese citizens, put them in essentially concentration camps, but the Chinese will oftentimes use the term re-education camp. They have focused on this notion of re-education and educating people who have strayed from the path of the Chinese communist system. And in the case of Hong Kong, they feel that that straying needs to come to an end, and it works best to begin with younger children because it's easier to sell them on the idea. The older generations are probably a lost cause. All you can do is crack down on them, but you can educate the younger, and that's what they're going to attempt to do.
Let's go back to this idea of Article 38 and the impact this might have around the world. We have seen, students who are here on international visas who have criticized something in Hong Kong be punished upon their return. We've seen the sort of, criticisms from the NBA and the problems that they had when somebody tweeted about supporting Hong Kong. What have we already seen before this law was passed as China tries to reach into, onto American soil and punish people who dare to speak out against them?
Right. And this is a policy that has been gaining steam in Beijing, too. And that's the notion that anyone who is a Chinese citizen, regardless of where they are in the world, cannot escape the long arm of Beijing's control. And if you do something while you are outside of China, you can expect to pay a price when you return. And this has become especially an issue for Chinese university students who are studying abroad. Many of them study abroad simply for the purpose of getting, the best education possible. But it's also possible that some of them study abroad to escape the control of Beijing. And during that process, if they speak out and the Beijing government learns of this, they can count on now being prosecuted once they return. And the Chinese government is assisted in this process by other Chinese university students who are essentially reporting on their peers. They depend on this by various institutes that they set up around the United States or around the world, which have as a kind of an outward purpose of teaching Chinese language, Chinese culture to other countries, but an internal role of maintaining surveillance over Chinese citizens who are outside of the country. Now, also as part of this new national security law, it applies not just to Chinese citizens or Chinese permanent residents. It can apply to anyone in the world. They are using the principle of extraterritorial jurisdiction to essentially apply Chinese law anywhere in the world. So if I am critical of the Chinese policies and Chinese government, which I have been and publicly so, if they deem that I have violated the Chinese law, if I arrive in Hong Kong or Shanghai or anywhere in China, I can be arrested, even as an American citizen who was speaking out in the United States. If I choose to visit China, then I am very possibly putting myself at risk. And this is a way to kind of apply a chilling effect on the speech of not just students, but also professors, whether Chinese or otherwise, businesses, even, as you noted, the tweet by the NBA player. If another NBA player was to tweet something critical of the Chinese government and to encourage pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong or elsewhere, if that NBA player was to then go to play a professional basketball game in somewhere in China, he could be arrested under this national security law. And we have already seen a chilling effect on multinational corporations, including American corporations, in what they allow their workers to say publicly, especially in China. And so in many ways, thanks to the global economy and global travel, the Chinese law is having the effect they intended it to, and that is to chill the pro-democracy or anti-Beijing demonstrations, tweets, Facebook posts, editorials, to control that. And it's working. And it can have an effect as well on human rights organizations, especially, for example, if Amnesty International has some local Chinese citizens working for human rights as part of Amnesty International. Not only can those Chinese citizens be arrested, but the leaders of Amnesty International could be at risk if, in fact, they ever travel to China for conference or vacation or research, whatever. So it's having the national security law is one of probably the most far-reaching we've ever seen, and it's already having an effect in some ways before it was even passed.
So on this program, in conversations I can think back even just in the past 12 months, the most I've heard China or the Chinese central government criticized has come from farmers who have spoken out against unfair trading practices and have been supportive in President Trump's efforts to renegotiate trade agreements with China. Talk a little bit about how that could affect farmers trying to do business and trade deals with the Chinese, with the communities in China or Chinese businesses. Do they have to be thoughtful about what they say about international trade?
Well, that's a really interesting question because, and I can tell you, and this shows the political science and legal nerd in me, I read through the English translation of the national security law. And, yeah. It is very vague and ambiguous by design. So essentially, what a word means is whatever the Chinese government wants that word to mean if they choose to prosecute someone. And so, for example, if you were to look at the sections on subversion or terrorism, it doesn't have to be a physical, you know, we're going to blow up the central government's representative's building in Hong Kong. It could be, for example, economic subversion or in the terms of the section on terrorism, undermining the, the esteem in which the central government is held to raise questions about it and to encourage people to question it. And if, for example, a representative of a farmers organization in South Dakota speaks out rather boldly and explicitly about what the Chinese government is doing, and an attack on their trade policy is viewed as an attack on the Chinese system and to raise questions about the Chinese government and its actions, that particular representative could potentially be in trouble if he or she travels to Beijing for a trade conference or to encourage opening up a deal for another product or produce. So, it's not. I would argue that it's probably unlikely for such a person to suffer the wrath of the Chinese government in this particular type of case. However, the wording of the national security law is vague and ambiguous enough to allow the Chinese government to essentially go after anyone that they choose to go after, and especially if they can get their hands on this person. And we've already seen as well threats by the Chinese government, and they've possibly been carried out, of kidnapping Chinese citizens from foreign countries to bring them back to hold them accountable, or people of Chinese descent who are not necessarily Chinese citizens grabbing them and taking them back to China, making them renounce their citizenship elsewhere, and then holding them accountable under Chinese law. And so clearly this national security law affects the people of Hong Kong, but the practices can be significantly more far-reaching. And, certainly some analysts, and I my guess would be national security folks and diplomats, are concerned about what this would mean eventually for Taiwan. And I would not be surprised to see a similar piece of legislation emanating from Beijing that would apply to Taiwan, which would make it very difficult for Taiwanese to travel or to speak out for fear that they could be latched onto by the Chinese government and taken back for trial. So there are a number of different paths that the Chinese government can go down with this. And your example is certainly an opportunity, if you will, for the Chinese government. I don't think it's one that they will exercise, but it's certainly a door that they've opened for themselves if they want to walk through it.
We'll have to leave that here for now, but hopefully we can talk about it more, including what can be done about it. But Dr. Tim Shoren from the University of South Dakota, thank you for helping put this in perspective, and we'll talk to you next time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.